Beis Daf Lamed Beis. We are on the bottom of Lamed Alf Lamed Beis. We are beginning with the words Amar Shmuel, about a dozen lines from the bottom of the Amud. Gemara here in the fourth parak of Beis, primarily dealing with issues of wood collection, challenges of wood being muksa. And so the Mishnayos here take us on a little bit of a detour. The Mishnah on the back end of Lamed Alf Lamed Beis yesterday talked about a house which was filled with fruit, and there was no way of entering into the house. Are the fruit going to be muksa? So the Tanakhama's position is that the fruit is not going to be muksa, and despite the fact that the fruit are inaccessible going into Yom Tov, nevertheless, the fruit itself is not a davar muksa, and as a result of that, if for whatever reason the wall breaks down, so one is allowed to use the fruit on Yom Tov. You can't break the wall of the house going into it. That would be a violation of stira. But nevertheless, the food itself is not muksa. Shitas Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah is af poches lechatchila. One can break the door down even lechatchila. That position of Rabbi Meir is challenging to understand. The Gemara itself yesterday was perplexed by that shita of Rabbi Meir. How in the world would you be able to knock down the wall? That would be an act of stira, and presumably that would be prohibited. The Gemara explained that we're talking about, it's not stira midaraisa, it's only stira midarabanan. That means to say that the walls were made up of bricks that were not cemented one into the other, and so therefore this is not a binyan keva, it's only a binyan arai, and so as a result of that, breaking it would only be an issa derabanan. Aren't the bricks muksa? That was the Gemara's follow-up question. And the Gemara's response is, yeah, the bricks are muksa, but for Rabbi Meir, one is allowed to enjoy anyanta food, and the ochel nefesh heter is going to override the issues of muksa. The Tosfos on the bottom of the Amud pointed out that this is a point that the Balei HaTosfos already made earlier in the Masechta, and Tosfos reminds us that this is going to be another piece of evidence and proof that for ochel nefesh, so there are Tanaim, notably Rabbi Meir of yesterday's daf, were of the opinion that ochel nefesh is going to be able to override muksa. With that stated, the Gemara is going to continue now in a discussion regarding Binyan and Stira on Yantav. And we start with a halacha given over by Shmuel. Amar Shmuel, Chosama Shebekarka. So if I have literally seals of the ground, but basically what we're describing over here is a cellar door that goes into the ground, into some sort of submerged pit into the ground. And those cellar doors that are making sure that it's closed, and hopefully nobody will fall in. But anyway, so it's locked. It's locked by ropes. And so over here, what can you do in order to open up those ropes on Yom Tov? So Matir, so Shmuel says what you can do is you can untie the ropes. Now, even though there is a malacha on Shabbos and Yom Tov of Matir, it's one of the 39 malachos, but as Rashi points out over here, that's only if it is something which was permanently tied, and now you're untying it. However, the ropes over here are tied and untied with frequency, and so therefore, it is not going to be a violation of the malacha of Matir. But what you can't do is that you can't unravel the ropes and you can't cut the ropes. Shebekalim, now if the ropes are tying up something like a chest which is movable, matir mafkia v'chotech, then you can untie the rope, you can unravel the rope, and you can even cut the rope as well. Achad Shabbos v'achad Yom Tov, and that heter of Shmuel would be true for both Shabbos and Yom Tov as well. Good. So far we have now a psak issued by Shmuel that if I have a rope tying down a doorway, so untying the rope would be fine, but breaking it or unraveling the rope would be a violation of stira, considering that this rope is now holding down a door which is connected to a property, and so therefore it would be a violation of stira. Meisa, the Gemara challenges this idea. Chosam shebekarka b'shabbos matir v'lo mafkia v'lo chotech. So here in the Braisa, so I have the ropes, these ropes that are serving as locks, and they are connected to a door to the ground. So on Shabbos, you can untie them, but you can't unravel and you can't cut. The author of this braisa says that on Yom Tov, you can do whatever you want. Untie, unravel, and even cut the rope. Samani, Rabbi Meir. So obviously, this braisa goes directly in opposition to the position of Shmuel. So the Gemara says, okay, but here's what I could say, that the braisa we just quoted is going like the sheet of Rabbi Meir. Da'amar apoches lechatchila. Remember Rabbi Meir of the Mishnah that we saw in yesterday's daf? Rabbi Meir even allows you to break the wall down the chatchil of a notel and allow it to take the fruit on Yom Tov. So if Rabbi Meir is allowing an act of stira, granted yesterday we pointed out that soser midrabbanan, not soser midaraisa, but if Rabbi Meir allows for an act of soser on Yom Tov, So then presumably Reb Meir would also be the one who allows you to cut or unravel the rope on the Chosam Shebekarka. And Shmuel would just simply say that we don't follow like Reb Meir, meaning it is a Shita, and it could be the author of the Brisa, but we don't follow that position. Upliga Rabban Aleha. And Shmuel, continuing his defense, would say that the Chachamim argued with Rabbi Meir, Ba'anadam Rika Rabbanan, and I hold like the Chachamim. Continues the Gemara, Upliga Rabban Aleha, Bechosam Shebekarka. So the Gemara says, okay, so far it would have been a good argument. It happens to be that we know a little bit more information. Notably, we know that on this particular issue, Chosam Shebekarka, we know the Chachamim don't agree with, I'm sorry, we know the Chachamim do in fact agree with Rabbi Meir. How do we know that? Bad time, we learned in a Braisa. Modim Chacham L'Rab Meir, there is agreement between the Chacham and Rab Meir. B'chosam Shebekarka, Shebeshabbos, Matir, V'lo Mafkia, V'lo Chotech. That on Shabbos, all you can do is cut, but you can't, sorry, all you can do is untie, but you can't cut, and you can't unravel the rope. And on Yantav, Matir, Mafkia, V'lo Chotech, but on Yantav, you're allowed to do all three. You're allowed to untie, unravel, and even cut the rope. So now, in this brisa, we say that the Chachamim agreed to the Shita of Rabbi Meir, and so now the defense that we had on behalf of Shmuel is no longer going to be a good defense, because now we have learned that the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir, in fact, agree that Chosam Shebekarka Anyantiv, so you can untie it, you can cut it, you can unravel it, you can open it in any manner. So, at this point in time, Shmuel, who says that you can only untie, but not cut and not unravel. So right now, it does not seem like there's any Tana that supports his position. As we now turn to the top of Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, so the Gemara says, "Hudam Rikiay Tana." So Gemara says that in defense of Shmuel, he actually does have a Tana supporting his position. The following: the Tanya Melanta Nebraisa, Chosam Shebekarka Matya V'lo Mafkia V'lo Chotech. That when I have these ropes tying down, holding down the doorway of a binyan of a building. So lo mafkia v'lo chotech echad Shabbos v'echad yontov. So you cannot cut, you cannot unravel, not on Shabbos, not on yontov. Good. Now the brisa is going to continue, but at this point in time, it becomes clear at this juncture that there is now a Tana that is, in fact, exactly what Shmuel says. Now shebekli, now here comes a little bit of a tricky part, and that is the brisa goes on and says that if this is part of a keli, meaning it's the ropes holding a chest, so b'Shabbos matir v'lo mafkia v'lo chotech. So on Shabbos, so one is allowed to untie, but one is not allowed to unravel. Now one is not allowed to cut. Be yom tov, matir mafkia v'chotech. But on yontov, you're allowed to do everything. Meaning that, being that it's yontov, so there is an allowance to go ahead and to cut and to untie, to unravel, and even to cut that rope. So now what comes out is as follows. So as far as the Shita of Shmuel is concerned, so the beginning portion of this brisa is in clear agreement with Shmuel, or better stated, Shmuel now is holding like the brisa. Now, Teras l'Chareisha, l'Seifa Kasha. So the Gemara says, but the problem now becomes the Seifa, because here in this brisa that we just used in order to defend the Shita of Shmuel, so it said that, good, so as far as Chosam Shebekarka, it's exactly what Shmuel says. That we're going to be machmir and yantiv and only allow for untying the ropes, but not for unraveling or cutting the ropes. However, the Braisa went on to describe that when it comes to a keli, so the Braisa says that on Shabbos matir, but on yantiv matir mafkir v'chotech, then yantiv you're allowed to do whatever you want in order to open it up, and that's not the shita of Shmuel, because the shita of Shmuel is that when it comes to a kli, when it comes to a chosen shebekli, so Shmuel allowed for everything. Go back to the beginning of our entire sugya, where the Gemara says, Shebekele ma'atim afkev v'chotech, echa Shabbos v'echa yantav. So Shmuel allowed for the opening up of any kli, whether it be Shabbos or whether it be yantav. So the Gemara says, so that becomes problematic. In other words, the brisa that we just used to support Shmuel, at the same time does not support Shmuel as it relates to kelim. So Hamani, so the Gemara says, the author of that brisa, meaning the second half of the brisa, Reb Nechemihi, it's the Shita Reb Nechemihi, Medam Rekol HaKelim, and they tell him, Ela Derech Tashmishan. Reb Nechemihi, who we've seen already a number of times throughout Chas, is of the position that a Kli can only be used, Derech Tashmishan. And just to give a brief introduction to the Shita Reb Nechemihi, so basically we have the following. We have, in the world of Muksa, three basic Shitas. We've been discussing this since the beginning of the Masechta, and that is that we have the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemya, and I present them in the order as they are adhering to Muksa, from most lenient to more strict. Let's start with Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon Leisle Muksa. So as we already seen now numerous times, Rabbi Shimon has an extraordinarily limited application of Muksa. His purview, his scope of Muksa is extraordinarily limited. Things like muksa, machmas, chisar, and kiss are going to fall under the rubric of muksa, but outside of that, there are going to be very few other examples that fall under the category of muksa for Rabbi Shimon. Tzmukin, the grogers, the tzmukim. Okay, not for now. Anyway, the Rabbi Shimon has an extraordinarily limited view of muksa. Rabbi Yehuda is more expansive. The Gemara's expression, Rabbi Yehuda islay muksa, Rabbi Yehuda holds a muksa, and so therefore Rabbi Yehuda has a more expansive view of what will fall under the category of muksa. And then there's another third shita, and that's the shita of Rabbi Nechemya. So the Rabbi shita of Rabbi Nechemya is Rabbi Nechemya says that not only does he hold a muksa, but the shita of Rabbi Nechemya is that muksa can only be moved for its primary function and for its primary purpose. That means that according to Rabbi Nechemya, a kli can only be used for its primary purpose and for nothing else. So for example, according to Rabbi Nechemya, if you had a knife can only be moved for cutting food. A knife cannot be moved for any other purpose. And so that means to say that according to Rabbi Nechemya, even if you have a knife, which is a kli shemalachto leheter, nevertheless, that knife cannot be used in order to cut anything else. And so now what the Gemara is proposing is that the author of this braisa that we just quoted is in fact going like the shita of Rabbi Nechemya. And now going back to the Gemara, let's read this inside. The Amar Rabbi Nechemya says, "Kol akilim in italam ela derech tashmishan," that the kli can only be used for its primary purpose. So, e Rabbi Nechemya ma'ir Shabbos afilu yom tov nami. So the Gemara says, "Fine." So that means to say that according to Rabbi Nechemya, what's the problem? Is that you can't cut the rope. You can't cut the rope. There's nothing inherently wrong with cutting the rope. It's just that according to Rabbi Nechemya, you simply don't have anything to cut the rope with, because a knife, according to Rabbi Nechemya, cannot be moved for anything other than the usage of food. In other words, for cutting food. But you can't move a knife in order to cut a rope. So, but the Gemara is bothered by the fact that if, in fact, the author of this braisa is Rabbi Nechemya, there should not be a difference between Shabbos and Yontif. As much as there is an Isser Muksa for Rabbi Nechemya on Shabbos, there's also an Isser Muksa for Rabbi Nechemya on Yontif as well. Now, v'chitem, and going back to the Gemara, Shanya Leila Rabbi Nechemya ben Shavuos Shabbos v'Shavuos Yom Tov, so the Gemara is suggesting, proposing that maybe for Rabbi Nechemya, so his muksa for Shabbos is going to be slightly more machmir than his muksa on Yom Tov. And the Gemara now is proposing something, which quite frankly, we said the opposite of earlier in the Masechta, in the beginning of the Masechta. The proposal the Gemara made over there is that the muksa iser is stronger on Yom Tov than it is on Shabbos. But over here, the Gemara is now going in the other direction. The Gemara is suggesting that the iser muksa is stronger on Shabbos than it is on Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, Umisha and Yilei. The Gemara says, yeah, but I don't think you're right. Meaning, I think Rabbi Nechemya assumes his more strict position of muksa, not only in Shabbos, but in Yom Tov as well, and the Gemara is about to make its case. Vaha Tini, we learned in the following braisa. Tini Chada, we're going to be learning three successive braisas. Braisa number one. Masikim b'kelim in vain, masikim b'shivrei kelim. What can you use as firewood? Back to the topic of firewood. Obviously, we're talking about Yom Tov, because on Shabbos, you're not allowed to make a fire. Lo sevaru esh b'chol moshe seichem. So clearly, this is a description of Yom Tov. So what can I use with firewood? So again, going back to what we learned to discuss in the Mishnayos here in this fourth parak. So if I set aside wood for fire, so then obviously that can be used. Over here, what if I want to use a kli? An old bench that I have no longer any use for, or shivrei kelim. Or let's say that I had a bench that broke on Yom Tov. So according to Bryson number one, you could use kelim, but you can't use shivrei kelim. Now you could use a kli because a kli is something that had purpose, had function going into Yom Tov, and therefore you could use it as firewood, even though you probably weren't thinking of using it for firewood, but nevertheless, it's not a dvar muksa. On the other hand, shivrei kelim, a kli that broke on Yom Tov, so now those pieces, so what status do those pieces have? They are considered nolad, and so therefore they're subject to muksa. That is braisa number one. V'tan idach braisa number two. Masikim ben mekelim ben shivrei kelim in braisa number two, I could use either the kli or the kli that broke on Yom Tov. And then v'tan yidach, and the third braisa say, mesikin lo b'kelim lo b'shivrei kelim. I can't use the kli, and I can't use even shivrei kelim as well. Now, obviously, these three braisas are at odds with each other, umishani. So giving now a fluid, simple pshat within these three braisas, lo kasha ha Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, ha Rabbi Nechemya. So the three braisas are just simply representative of the three different opinions regarding muksa. And let's go in order from most lenient to most strict. So let's start with Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon lays say muksa, so Rabbi Shimon would have no problem not only taking a kli and using that as my fuel for my fire, but even taking shivrei kelim and using that as well. In other words, because Rabbi Shimon has a really limited application and scope of muksa. So that would be the brisa that would support Rabbi Shimon, which is that you can burn both kelim and shivrei kelim. Now let's go to Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda has a broader application of muksa. So a kli going into yantiv, so obviously that was something that was prepared going into yantiv. So that could be used for your fire. But shivrei kelim, being that that's nolad, that can't be used for your fire, and that would be the brisa that reflects the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Now we'll go to Rabbi Nechemya. Rabbi Nechemya says that a kli can only be used for its main purpose, so that means that according to Rabbi Nechemya, so of course the shivrei kelim you can't use because that's considered nolad, but even the kli itself, but what's the main, what's the primary purpose of the kli? To sit on. So what you can't do on yantiv is that you can't reassign it for another usage. You can't now decide on yantiv that what you want to do is you want to take that kli now and use it as fuel for your fire. And that brisa obviously would now be the position of Rabbi Nechemya. That now takes us through the three different brises and the three explanations of each brise. So the point of all this is that you see that Reb Nechemya takes his position of muksa and the idea that a kli can only be used for its main purpose, not only on Shabbos, but on Yantiv as well. So to make now a long point, hopefully a little bit shorter, so we now come to discover that according to Reb Nechemya, there really should be no difference between Shabbos and Yantiv. A dvar muksa on Shabbos is also going to be the same dvar muksa on Yantiv as well, which now means that we no longer really have a way of explaining that second part of the brisa. Second part of the brisa says that I can cut the chosam of a kli on yantav, but not on Shabbos. Who is the author of that position? To which the Gemara says, okay, that's going to be problematic. So the Gemara says, treitanai v'alibad rem nechemya. All right, so what we'll have to say is that although we have just pointed out that there is certainly a Mesorah that Reb Nechemya takes his position of Muksa, not only on Shabbos, but on Yontav as well, the Gemara says, but there's another viewpoint of Reb Nechemya, meaning there are multiple viewpoints of Reb Nechemya, and so therefore we could argue that the Brisa that we just quoted is in fact Reb Nechemya, admittedly an alternative view of Reb Nechemya. Okay, so there is a Brisa that is of the position that Reb Nechemya only takes his more chamer position of Muksa only on Shabbos and not on Yontav. Adkan, ready to start the next Mishnah. The Mishnah on Lamed Beis Amud Aleph starts off with three halachas that relate to more regarding lighting a fire. Mishnah number one, and point number one of the Mishnah, in pochasen es anir mimeshu ose kli, one cannot press a clay into making it into a lamp. That is a siyas kli, that's the formation of a kli, that would be asur on yantiv. Mishnah seems to be describing over here, Rashi gives a description where you're taking your fist and you're putting it into a clay. The clay at this point in time is still soft and malleable, and you basically form it into a rudimentary bowl. You're going to put oil in it, and you're going to put a wick in it, and you're going to use it as a lamp, and making it on yantiv is asiyas kli. You're not allowed to do that. That is number one. Number two of the Mishnah, in Osin, b'chamim b'yantiv, one is not allowed to make coals on yantiv. Fully admitting that I don't know how to make coals, but nevertheless, the processing of making coals also is considered a kli, and one is not allowed to make coals on yantiv. Number three, vein choschen es pesila, one is not allowed to cut a wick, cutting a wick into the proper size, so that also presumably would be a siyas kli. And another prohibition that one cannot do on yantiv, Rabbi Yehuda Amar choscha be'or, and Rabbi Yehuda is of the position that one is allowed to cut it with fire. That is will be clarified momentarily in the Gemara. Mantan the psichas ner manahu. So the Gemara's question is as follows. So we've now just seen in the Mishnah that one is not allowed to press his fist into the clay in order to make it into a ner. You didn't take the clay and then put it into the oven and harden it. You just really all you did is just shape it, and that is considered a siyas kli. We see that because the Mishnah says you cannot do that on yantiv. So now what we're going to do is that we're going to try to line up our Mishnah with another Mishnah, either from Kalim, or we're going to see in just a moment, a Mishnah in Adios, where basically we're going to see that there are opinions out there that just simply the formation of clay is considered asiyas kli. So, mantan de psichas ner, de pechisas ner manahu, that just simply fashioning the clay into a lantern is considered asiyas kli. I'm Rav Yosef Rav Meri, so it's a shita Rav Meri, the Tanya, we'll learn a braisa. So this is a tosefta of kelim. Kli cheres me'emasai mekabel tuma. So at what point in time is a kli cheres going to be mekabel tuma? We know that a kli cheres is susceptible to becoming tamei once it has a toch mishenigmara milachto divrei bimeir. So according to Reb Meir, the moment you finished it, meaning once you shape and molded it, so that at that point in time, that's Mekabel Tuma. Reb Yeshua Omer, Mishitzafra Bekifshan. Reb Yeshua says, no. And just because you shaped it is not enough. In other words, you have to take it and you have to put it into the oven in order to harden it. Then and only then is it going to be a kli that's going to be Mekabel Tuma. So Amalei Abayim Mimai. So before we get to Abayi's challenge, so now it seems pretty clear that our Mishnah over here that says that the shaping of the clay is considered asiyas kli, prohibited activity on Yontav, and that seems very much to align with the position of Rabbi Meir, that the kli is going to be Mekabel Tuma the moment that you shaped it. And so the two seem to be in alignment with one another. So Rav Yosef now just basically takes the shita of our Mishnah and puts it together with the Rav Meir of the Tosefta. Now on that, Amalei Abayi Mi Mai, Abayi says, how do I know that that's true? Dama Ad Kam Lo Kam Rav Meir Asam Ela Dechazilik Bule Mi Midei. In the Mishnah, in the Tosefta of Kalim, so over there, when I take the kli and I fashion it, so at that point in time, it could be used, it could be functional. Because even though right now, at this point in time, it's still malleable, and it's still soft, and it's not yet hardened, but you could use it. You could use it to stack some items in there. Granted, you can't pour a liquid into it, because it's not yet been put into the oven, hasn't yet been hardened, but it can hold things. But over here, what is it going to hold? Meaning, if I'm going to be using it as a lantern, so that means I'm going to be pouring oil into it. You're going to pour oil into this soft clay, which hasn't yet hardened yet, and all that's going to happen now is it's just going to get softer and it's going to fall apart. So at this point in time, I don't think the cases are comparable. I don't think the Tosefta and Kalim is comparable to our discussion over here. So the Gemara's response is, look, Bula Bepshita. The Gemara says, no, maybe over here as well, even though it is soft, you could still have some use and function to it, and that is you could put some small coins in it. Of course, those coins are useless for you on Yontav, but the point is that it still serves as some sort of function, and therefore it will be a violation of Asiyas Kli. Iga da Amre, now we're going to do this again. We're going to go a second round of this discussion of trying to take our Mishnah over here and line it up with a Shita. And in the second version, instead of going to the Tosefta and Kalim, we're going to go to a Mishnah in Adios. I'm Rav Yosef Rabbi Eliezer Bar Tzadok He. So the Gemara now is going to quote Rav Yosef and say that it aligns with the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer Bar Tzadok. Didn't that we learned in the Mishnah? So if we're talking about plates, now at this point in time, the Gemara assumes that we have some idea of what we're talking about. Actually, in just a little bit, the Gemara is going to give us a clear definition of what we're describing over here. They're really rudimentary plates that are just simply flattened out. In other words, it's a piece of clay that's flattened out and are used as plates. They really have no definition. They don't even have any depth to them. But anyway, Alfas and Charanios Taros Baolamis Utmeos Bemasa Hazav. So according to the Tanakhama, it is not going to be subject to Tumas Ohel, because Tumas Ohel, in order for a kli to become tummy to Tumas Ohel, it has to have a toch. Rashi goes through the drashas. Anyway, so it can't be subject to Tumas Ohel. However, it can be subject to Masa Hazav. If a Zav were to lift it or to move it, Heset, so then it's going to become Tameh. Rashi points out over there, for Tumas Zav, it doesn't need to have a toch. It's based on a series of drashas. Anyway, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok Omer, Af Taharus B'Masa Hazav, Lefish Lo Nigmara Malachtan. According to Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok, this clay, which all we did was flattened it out into a flat plate, so it is not going to be subject to Tumas Masa Hazav, because Lo Nigmara Malachtan, because it's not yet finished, meaning it does not have any definition whatsoever, it doesn't even have a toch. So, but what comes out, however, is that according to Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok, once you give it some more definition, and once you give it a toch, so it's at that point in time, now it's going to be Mekabel Tuma. And so what Rav Yosef now is proposing is that Shita of Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Tzadok is in fact going to be our Mishnah. So Amalei Abayi Damat Kan Lo Kam Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Tzadok Hasam Ela Dechazelik Bule Be Mide. Again, the Gemara goes over the same back and forth. It could very well be that Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Tzadok over there is of the position that once it has definition, it has some purpose to it. And therefore it can hold something, meaning I'm not going to put some liquid in there, but I'll put dry food in there, and that would be fine. But over here, I've alhachla my chazit. But what am I going to do with it over here? So the Gemara's answer is the same. Lekbule bepshite. So the Gemara says, yeah, maybe you could put some small coins in there. Meaning, maybe over here you could find some function to it as well. Okay, two rounds of basically our Mishnah that says that when I take clay and I shape it, even though I haven't put it in the oven yet, it's going to be a kli. Therefore, you're not allowed to do that in Yantiv. And either the author of our Mishnah could be consistent with the Shita of Rabbi Meir in the Tosefta and Caleb, or consistent with the Shita of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok from the Mishnah in Adios. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a Braisa. Ein pochasin es haner ve'ein osin afasin charanios b'yamtov. So one is not allowed to shape the clay into a lantern, and also one is not allowed to make afasin charanios on yantar. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel matir b'afasin charanios. And Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel allows for the making of afasin charanios. It's so basic, it's so rudimentary, that it's basically not considered as kli. My charanios am Rabbi Yehuda aranios. My aranios am Rabbi Tzi'i chaklaisa. And it's at this point in time that the Gemara tries to help us a little bit more in terms of giving us a working definition of what the afasin charanios are. Like we said, it's basically plates that are used by farmers out in the fields. Einos and pachamim, the Gemara says that one is not to make holes on yantar pshitel amaychaz. The Gemara says, yeah, it's obvious, meaning what usage will we even have with the coals over here? So tani Rabbi Chiya lo nitzricha el alamosan la'ul yarin. So the Gemara says, well, you can give it to the bath attendants, lebo bayom, for yantiv itself. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? Boba yom ishari. The bath attendants are not allowed to heat up the water on yantiv in order so that people can bathe. So a point that the Gemara made earlier, that in yantiv you can heat up water in order to wash your hands and feet. That was the shita of Beis Hillel, but you cannot warm up water to wash your whole body. Because Bizmana Gemara, this was Tosus' understanding of the Gemara back then, in the Bizmana Gemara. So bathing every day was not something which was shavu l'chol nefesh. And so therefore, to heat up water to bathe your whole body, that's not allowed. So the Gemara says, so over here, what are you using with the coals? You're going to give it to the bath attendants. Even the bath attendants won't be able to use it, levo vayom. And so therefore, it seems to be obvious. I mean, you're making a kli that's not even going to have a function and usage on yantiv. Like, why would the Mishnah even need to tell us that? So, kedam rav laziyah v'kodem gzera, hachanami laziyah v'kodem gzera. So the Gemara says it's true that you're not allowed to bathe on yantiv, but there was a tkufa, there was a period of time where going to the shvitz was in fact going to be mutter on yantiv. So the chachamim made a number of gzeras. We saw this together in the Gemara and Shabbos. So some of those gzeras, it took some time for it to take form and to take shape, meaning to say that the Chachamim started with just one gzera, that is to say that you cannot bathe on Shabbos and Yantiv, not even with water that was heated up before Yantiv, for fear that the bath attendants would end up heating the water on Shabbos and Yantiv itself. But then from that point going forward, so the gzeras mounted more and more as they realized that the bath attendants really could not be trusted in terms of their practices. And therefore, not even a shvitz, not even just going into a sauna would be allowed in Yantiv. But there was a period in time where shvitz, where saunas were allowed. And so therefore, the coals would be good for those. And so now, in that short kufa of time where the saunas would be okay, so then the pchamim would be used for the saunas. And the chiddush over here is that you can't make the coals for the saunas, because making the coals is going to be the formation of a kli. You're being misakin. And then, continuing to the last part of our Mishnah, which is that you're not allowed to cut a wick into two. That, once again, is a siyas kli. However, what you're allowed to do is that you're allowed to cut it by lighting it. Mishnah besakin delal. And the Gemara over here is bothered by a really simple question, and that is, what's the difference between a knife, dikamasakin mana, where there it's tikkun mana, but or nami, kamasakin mana, as we're now on the top of the Amun Beis. And even if I were to cut it with a fire, that's also tikkun mana. And the Gemara's question over here is really simple, and that is, what's the difference between the two? To which the Gemara says, tani Rabbi Chiya chot chaba ora b'fi shtei neiros. The Gemara says, well, what we could do is that we could light it with a fire as the two ends of this same wick are now in two different lanterns. And so therefore, as Rashi describes over here, so to cut the wick down to size, so that would be a tikkun mana. However, to light it by simply igniting it in the middle, and now they're going to separate and go into and serve two different lanterns, so that's no longer considered tikkun mana. It's basically all you're doing is you're just simply lighting two different lanterns. One is allowed to be mochet the wicks on yantiv. So my mochten. So a simple question, which is, what are we talking about over here? Amar Rabbi Chanina bar Shamaya, la'aduye chushcha. Tosfos back on Chav Beis understood that this basically means the following, and that is that one is allowed to remove the singe end of a wick, meaning the wick, as it's slit, so it forms a little bit of charcoal, of burnt end, and that would be a bit of a challenge in terms of the wick lighting well. And so one can do is take it off, scrape it off, so that the wick does not the wick does not dim, and that the wick would be a good way of facilitating the fire. From Tosfos, it does seem that you're allowed to do this even while the wick is lit. And in other words, and it's not concerned that maybe while you're doing it, you're going to be extinguishing a little bit. Admittedly, it's a little bit difficult to understand how you're going to be doing this while the wick is lit. But anyway, regardless, the point from our Gemara, meaning in the context of our Gemara, what seems to be is that this is not registered as a Asiyas Kli, and therefore it would be permitted. So as it relates to wicks and yontif, so there are three halachas, three are going to come out to be a chumra, three of them are going to be a kula, and lahachmir. And on the three that are going to be a chumra, in golin osa, one is not allowed to twist the wicks in order to make them. Lichatchil v'yamtov, that is going to be asiyas kli. Ein mehavavim osaba or. You're not allowed to burn it a little bit with a fire in order to remove the threads that are coming from the rosh psila, from the top of the wick. This is also considered tikkun kli. And ein chotchen osala shnayim, one is not allowed to cut into two. That two would be considered asiyas kli, and you're not allowed to do that. Lehakel. As far as three halachas are concerned regarding the kulas, mim'acha v'yad, what one could do is one could press it with his hands in order so that it'd be thinner and it'd be easier to light. Pressing with the hands is not considered asiyas kli. Shoreh b'shemen, you could soak it in oil, obviously, so that it burns better. And finally, chot chabor, one is allowed to cut it with fire, kefi b'fish teneros, like we described earlier, in that the two ends of this very long wick are going into two different lanterns, and you're burning it in the middle, and as a result of that, you are not cutting it, but rather you're just simply lighting two. Just happens to be you're doing it with one action. The Gemara over here now quotes another memra of Rav Nosson Bar Abba. So he was the one who said just a few lines earlier, Mochtin es apsila. So the Gemara now is going to be quoting another halacha, but not so much a halacha, a little bit of agarata. So the wealthy people of Bavel are in fact headed to Gehenim. So kihad de shapta bar marina sheikla le Bavel. So the Gemara tells the following story regarding this personality went down to Bavel and by minayu and asked the following question from them, from the members of the wealthy community of Bavel. Iska, would you please help me with a little venture capital? Meaning to say that would you give me the capital necessary? I'll make a business. I'll write simple buy and sell. We'll turn a profit. I'll split the profits with you. So he's asking for an advance so that he can make himself and his investors some money. And Velo Yavule, they just simply rejected his offer. They said no. Mizone, then he followed up with another question, which is, okay, so if you're not going to allow me to make business, but he unfortunately didn't have to eat. He asked for food. And Mezanami Lozainu, they did not provide for him food. Amar. So the shapta I said regarding the wealthy people of Bavel, Hani Ma'erev Rav Ka'asu. So he says, look, I'm going to tell you a little bit about their genealogy. They're not coming from the Avos. They're coming from the Erevra. They're descendants of the Erevra. Yechsiv, the Pasuk says, in Parshas Rev, Nasalacha Rachamim V'richamcha. And the Gemara now is understanding, Kol Hamarachim Alabiros, anyone has Rachmanus on people, Biyadushu Mizarishal Avram Avino, are in fact descendants from Avram Avino. If you go back to that Pasuk, so you got to look at the end of the Pasuk. Pasuk reads, "V'nasan l'cha rachamim v'rechamcha v'hir b'cha ka'asher nishba l'avosecha." So you see that the Rachmanis is connected to the Avos. So anyone who has proper Rachmanis is a descendant of Rav Mavina v'chol mishenim rachem alabrios, and anyone who is not a descendant, anyone who does not have the proper Rachmanis be'adu she'ino mizor shel Avram Avinu is not descending from Avram Avinu. V'amar Rav Nosson Bar Abba amar Rav kol hamitzape al shulchan acherim. Anyone waiting for an invitation from other people in order so that he can eat and does not have his own table to eat at, olam chashoch ba'ado. The world is dark towards him, meaning it's just simply not a life. It's a miserable existence, and the world is dark. Shenemar nodeid hu lalechem, the wanderer for the bread, aye yadaki nachon biado yom choshech. Pasuk in Iyov describes that somebody's wandering for food, so it's going to be experiencing a dark day. Rav Chisa amar af chayav enechayim, so, and Rav Chisa says it even stronger. His life is not considered a life. In other words, Nechshav Kames is like a dead person. Tanu Rabbanan Shlosha Chayim Enechayim. Three people whose lives are not considered lives. Ve'elohein, and they are. Hamatzap L'Shochan Chaver, somebody waiting for an invitation from somebody else does not have his own table to eat at. Number two, Mishi Yishtem Oshel Asalav, someone being dominated by his wife. And finally, number three, Mishi Yisurin Moshlin Begufo. Yisurin are taking over his body. So for these three categories, so their chayim and chayim, their life is just simply not alive. According to the Yesharim, even somebody who does not have only one suit to wear, and so such an individual with only one suit to wear, chayim and chayim. Now the Tanakama does not feel that this is a game changer. This is not going to ruin your life. Esher de ma'ayim b'mani, because having only one suit, so that back in the day, lice was a problem. And so, okay, so let's say you had one suit and it was infested. So according to the Tanakama, so that is an inconvenience, but that's all it is. It's just simply an inconvenience. What you'll do is you'll check the clothing and you'll get rid of the louse or the lice. And that's why they didn't include it in the list of people whose lives are simply not a life. We're going to stop over here. Tomorrow, pick it up with the Mishnah. And let's quickly review. Let's recap. We start off this morning with a halacha of this morning. We start off with a halacha of Shmuel. Shmuel was of the position that chosam shebekarka. So one can untie, but one cannot cut the chosam shebekarka, and one cannot unravel it. That would be an act of stira bibinyan. It's a form of demolition, and the Gemara has endeavored to find a Tana that supports this viewpoint of Shmuel. And after a lot of effort, the Gemara does in fact find a brisa so that does have a Tana that holds of this position. And that takes us all the way to Lamed Beis, unto the Mishnah. The Mishnah gave us three halachas regarding Tikkun Kli, three things that one is not allowed to do. Take a clay and form it into a lantern on Yontif, make a coal on Yontif, and also cutting the wicks to size. So these are three activities where they're all Asiyas Kli, and therefore one is not allowed to do it on Yontif. Rav Yehuda was of the position that you can cut it with, or you can cut it with a fire. The Gemara in the Amud Aleph went and first of all described that the making of a clay, just simply by fashioning and forming it, is in fact going to be considered a Asiyas Kli. So that position is echoed. Where is that position echoed? So there were two ways in which we said it. One is that it follows the position of Rebbe Meir in a Tosefta in Kalim. Or two, it follows the position of Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Tzadok in a Mishnah in Adios. The Gemara goes on to describe that making the coals on Yontif is going to be prohibited because making the coals is useful for the bath attendants, even though you're not allowed to warm up water on Shabbos and not on Yontif, and it goes without saying on Shabbos, even though on Yontif there are certain allowances that one can do in terms of warming up the water, but to bathe one's whole body, one cannot do so. There was a period of time where going to the Shvitz was mutter on Yantav. Even during that period of time, you can't make coals for that process because of making coals is considered Asiyas Kli. The Gemara goes over the idea that you can cut a wick on Yantav using a flame. In other words, under what circumstances would that be okay? The Gemara describes as we continue with our review on the Amud Beis is that we're talking about where the long wick is connected to two different lamps. And I'm lighting in the center. That fire now is viewed as not a cutting of the wicks, but rather just simply the lighting of the two lanterns, even though it's being done simultaneously. And even though at the same time, you're also in effect cutting the wicks, but under those circumstances, it would be okay. Rashi's language, which I didn't quote when we went through the Gemara, is a lo muchach de l'tkune mana mechavin. It's not evident that this is tikkun mana. Definitely that requires more understanding and more work. Why that should be that just because it doesn't look like tikkun mana, so why that should make it okay. So even with the Rashi, it does require more explanation. The Gemara went over six different halachas as it relates to wicks and yontiv. Three were machmir, three were mekel. And then the Gemara followed up with a number of agadic statements made by Rav Nassim Bar Abba. Rav Nassim Bar Abba on the Amud Aleph said over a halacha of removing off the char from the from the wick so that the flame burn better on the wicks, which in fact he said that was mutter. So as long as we quoted him, we talked about the Asirei Bavel, we talked about the wealthy people in Bavel, who were did not have Rachmanis, and he had very really strong words for those people, and a listing of three people whose lives are not lives. Adkan.